Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Tax Committee for April 18th, 2023. We really appreciate everyone for being here today. The order of business is to take testimony on House File 1938 and the DE amendment, which is the House tax budget bill. So we appreciate everyone for being here. And we're going to move into testimony. We're kind of going to ask folks to stick to around 2 minutes, and we will, I'll sort of announce who's on deck, and so we'll kind of have to keep it moving to make sure that we get to hear from everybody in the time that we have together this morning. The first item of business on the agenda is approval of the minutes for April 17th, 2023. Vice Chair Norris?
Chair Gomez, I move the minutes from the April 17th meeting of the Tax Committee.
Vice Chair Norris has moved the minutes for April 17th, 2023. Is there any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, please say no. The motion carries, and the minutes for April 17th, 2023 are adopted. All right, so we're just going to move right into our order of business. First up, Commissioner Paul Marquardt. Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Paul Marquardt, Commissioner of the Department of Revenue. And I would be remiss if I didn't remind everyone, today is April 18th, tax day. You have until about midnight tonight, so I just want to give you a little heads up about that. So, Madam Chair and members of the committee, I want to congratulate you on behalf of the Governor and Lieutenant Governor for putting together a really strong tax bill that's going to benefit greatly Minnesotans around the state. And thank you also for including many of the governor's provisions that were in his tax bill in this tax bill, House File 1938, as amended. And on January 2nd, Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan had their inauguration. And Governor Walz that day made a very simple but powerful goal for this state, and that was to make Minnesota the best state in the nation for kids and families. And with that, to eliminate child poverty. And I greatly appreciate your sharing in that goal in your child and working family credit. The child tax credit, we know it works. It is a proven winner, and it produces results. And this and the child tax credit will do a lot in reducing child poverty. So thank you for this. This is a major priority for the governor, and it's great to see this in the bill. Thank you so much. Thank you again for another huge priority for the governor, which is the one-time rebate checks. And the Governor Walz has many times talked about easing the pain of inflation, and this will do that. And the maximum credit that the House has in this bill, $1,325 credit, would rank in the top five of the 20 or so states that provided rebates in the last couple years. Greatly appreciate the many other areas in this tax bill that were also provisions in the governor's bill. The significant tax cut to Social Security taxes on those benefits. The bill that you have will say that 76% of all Social Security recipients will not pay any taxes on those benefits. Also expanding the K through 12 credit, expanding the working family credit and homestead to I-10 taxpayers, another big priority for the governor. The local government construction sales tax exemption, the one time, which will cover inflation, also very important, the federal conformity. I had mentioned this before, but the property tax division, Chair Lislegard, your efforts in providing very valuable property tax relief is a strong goal that the governor shares, and also in those bills were increases in local government aid, the lifeblood to many cities around the state, the increase to county program aid, the funding for soil and water conservation districts, the senior deferral program, all things that were in the governor's bill, and appreciate having it in this bill. Also, the recognition of the importance of tribal nation aid. The governor had a little different way to do that, but the recognition that that aid is valuable and important, it's great to see that. The reduction to the charitable combined net receipts tax, also something in the governor's bill. And thank you for putting in the Department of Revenue policy and technical bill. It's always great to see that early in a bill. I've been around a long time where that kind of gets put towards the end. So not in the governor's bill, but the expansion to the renter's credit and the homestead credit state refund are really great ways to provide direct property tax relief. And I saw nestled in this bill something called a taxpayer's receipt. Now, I don't know the governor's position on this, but the commissioner really likes it. I want to say that. So, again, on behalf of the governor and lieutenant governor, thank you for putting together a wonderful bill that matches up very closely with what the governor and lieutenant governor is promoting. And it's been an honor working with this committee. And I look forward, as we move forward, to continue to work to put together a bill that will make Minnesota the best state in the nation for our kids and our families. And finally, I want to end with this, is that the Department of Revenue takes very seriously our responsibility to implement the goals and priorities of the governor and the legislature, and to do that in a way that best serves our taxpayers and the state. And I look forward to continuing to do that. Again, thank you for allowing me to testify, and congratulations on a very strong tax bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Up next, we're honored to be joined by three elected leaders from the tribal nations. First up is Chairman Michael Fairbanks from the White Earth Nation. Welcome to the committee, Chairman Fairbanks. Please just introduce yourself as you're getting started with your testimony.
Honey Buju, Chairman, Madam Chairman, and members of the committee. I want to say, first of all, I want to say miigwech to everyone here on the committee for listening to us today and, you know, looking at this bill and, you know, and all the members that work so hard on this. You know, as the chairman of my nation and working with my, you know, over 17,000 constituents that we have is very important with this bill. And, you know, I want to say that we're really thankful for this committee and yourself, Chairman or Chairwoman, that you put this in the bill for us this year. And, you know, I know one thing that, you know, that we've talked about with the other nations is that, you know, we're a nation within the nation, you know, and, you know, our gaming, and especially with the three leaderships that I have, the two other leaders I have with me, is, you know, we've been dealing with a lot up north. You know, we're more the rural area, and especially in White Earth, we deal with agriculture. We're a third agriculture, two-thirds forest. So, I mean, we're really, really kind of that kind of Minnesotan, you know, type atmosphere where we're at. And, of course, as, you know, my leadership and my council, you know, we're here to help everyone within our borders. And that's, you know, all the constituents, Minnesota constituents, our constituents. You know, I know that, I mean, talking to yourself and talking to other representatives that, you know, back in White Earth, that, you know, that we have a lot of shortfalls when it comes to our public services, especially with our police department, with our EMS, with our especially our fire department, because we're, you know, we're all supplementing, and, you know, we're doing what we can to help our local area, you know, all of our townships out that are within our borders, to give those services that are much needed for not only our membership and our constituents, but all constituents of our, with that sits within our borders. So I think it's important that, you know, this bill goes through, and that, you know, we as White Earth, you know, that, you know, the disparities, I guess that's what I'll call it, that we work through every year when we have to budget and we have to you know, make ends meet, and like I know the other leaders here are going to talk about is, you know, what COVID did to us, and, you know, how it kind of hurt us and crippled us, and, you know, the bounce back, and, you know, and then having a, you know, a good leadership here at this, in this room today, and, you know, and just thinking about it, and, you know, and I'm here to also support the housing and the homeless initiative that's part of this bill too, because that's one area that we talked about many times before about, you know, the housing situation we have back home is really decrepit. And I know that we've been trying and, you know, working hard, and I think the other two leadership here sitting next to with me, you know, can probably almost say the same stories that our housing is really suffering a lot. And, you know, I know that Secretary Strong here from Red Lake will talk a lot about the urban area. And also I want to talk about the urban area because we do have a lot of membership that live down in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. And I know that's one thing that we add them to the formula too, of helping them as much as we can in the metro area too, as much as we can. And housing is so critical for our people. So, and I want to say miigwech to everyone on this committee for listening to us, and I'll divert to Chairman Jackson here from Leech Lake. So thank you, Chair, Madam Chair, and committee members. Miigwech.
Thank you, Chairman Fairbanks. Next up, Chairman Farone Jackson from the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe. Welcome. Thank you.
Bonjour, Anine. Anine, Chairwoman Gomez and members of the committee. Thank you for taking time this morning to hear from tribal leaders regarding the proposal in Article 12, Section 27 of the House Tax Bill to provide aid to Minnesota's sovereign tribal governments. The Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe is in strong support of this proposal. We have approximately 10,000 members, you know, on our membership rolls, and close to 50% of them reside on the reservation and 50% down in the urban area here. And Leech Lake, like Minnesota other tribal governments, operates a sophisticated and complex government, providing wide ranges of services, including public works, law enforcement, education, health and human services, just like the other tribal governments. Leech Lake has chronically been underfunded in providing these critical and necessary services to our people. While federally recognized tribes like Leech Lake Band maintains our sovereign status independent of state and federal governments, it is important to note that the people of the Leech Lake Reservation are also citizens of the state of Minnesota. In 2020, on the outset of the COVID-19 pandemic response, precedent was set by the legislature in approving direct aid from Minnesota to the 11 federally recognized tribes in the state. Enacting this proposal would build upon that precedent as Minnesota tribal governments continue to serve our people on an ongoing basis. I urge you to support this provision, and I want to personally say thank you, miigwech, for the opportunity to testify today, and I am happy here to answer any questions. And I just want to echo a few words of Chairman Fairbanks here. We have a serious homeless issue back on Leech Lake. You know, currently we have close to 600 members on our housing waiting list, and they've been, that list has been there for years. And we have another 600 that we could have apply, but they know the list is so long, so a lot of them won't apply. So, you know, we're in dire need of these services that and funding that it takes to enact these. So I'm really happy about the local homeless prevention aid, and that's going to help. And I think homelessness is a big concern for all of us here in the state of Minnesota and all our tribal nations as well. Miigwech, thank you.
Thank you, Chairman Jackson. Could you just say your name into the mic for me for the record?
My English name is Farron Jackson Sr., and my Ojibwe name is Giwaydin, which means north wind. It was my father's name, and I was given his name when he passed in 1998.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Secretary Sam Strong is up next. He's the tribal secretary from the Red Lake Nation. Welcome to the committee.
Hello, everyone. My name is Sam Strong. I'm Secretary of Red Lake Nation, and it's an honor to speak before you here today. You know, we don't have much time here, so it's hard to recap everything that's going on within our nation, but I'll give you some really important highlights. We have around 17,000 band members, much like White Earth, and many of our people are struggling, you know. There was a 2018 Wilder study that we completed for both on reservation as a part of a larger statewide survey. And within that survey, we found that there were 750 band members on the reservation that were experiencing homelessness or near homelessness. And so this is of a population of approximately 7,000 band members that live on reservation. And so a huge proponent, percentage of our population are experiencing homelessness. And so it's not just homelessness, it's poverty, it's, you know, the drug addiction and all the other issues that come with poverty. And so we have limited law enforcement resources. We have limited health and human service resources. Our health care is underfunded. And so as a result of that, many of our people are struggling. And so we serve all people on the reservation, band members or otherwise. And many of our band members live off the reservation as well. And so here in St. Paul, we have thousands of members. In Minneapolis, we have thousands of members. Go to Bemidji, we have 1,000 members in Bemidji even. And so the same issues permeate throughout our population. You know, we were dropped in these communities. I was born in Minneapolis as a result of the Indian relocation era. They dropped our families here without any services, and so our people lived in poverty. And so as part of that larger study, 18% of the homeless population are Native American. And so only a couple percentage of the entire state is Native American, yet 18% of the homeless population is Native American. And so I don't know if you guys remember the Wall of Forgotten Natives. You know, the largest percentage of any tribe was Red Lake there. And we struggle, you know, and who came to their aid? It was us. All the way from northern Minnesota, we came to their aid. We helped them get housed. And we continue to help our band members. We put our money into not only housing, but the mental health services, job training, the entire slew of resources, nutrition, et cetera, et cetera. You know, these are children that are suffering to eat. They're struggling to have a house over their head. You know, the basic necessities of life. And so it's important that we're no longer forgotten. It's important that we aren't dismissed. And if you don't want to do it for the right reason, which is for the heart and for, you know, helping these kids, do it for what's best for this state. You know, these people are still utilizing the state's resources. You know, they go to emergency rooms. We've studied this. You know, they go to the emergency rooms, the police calls. All the costs of these populations are borne by the state. You know, and instead of investing into them, we ignore them. We sweep them off the streets, and it's time that we start investing in the people that are from this state, the original people. You know, it's time that we start investing in our homeless population, in all of our populations, because when you invest in them, they get jobs. You know, of that Wall of Forgotten Natives, we housed over 150 people into stable housing. They're still in housing. These people don't want to be homeless. You give them the resources they need to succeed, they'll get off the streets. They will no longer be a cost to society, and they'll be a contributing member of this community that will strengthen our tax base. It'll strengthen all of us together, and so it's important that we remember that this isn't just about helping tribal people. It's about creating a stronger Minnesota, and it's time that we are recognized. We are no longer forgotten. It's time that we are seen, because we're here, and we're going to be here forever. And it's important, and we are asking for your help to help uplift our people and uplift the people that are most in need. And so think about our children. Think about those that are struggling. And go down to one of those homeless encampments and see how they're living. And, you know, and tell me that it shouldn't be a priority for the state. And so I come here and in a good way. I come here asking for help in this, and I ask for your support in helping people that really deserve a chance and deserve to be a part of this state, and deserve to be seen. And so, Miigwech.
Thank you very much, Secretary Strong. And thank you to all of our tribal leaders for joining us today. I think it's really important for the committee to hear from you about the situation that your members are facing on and off reservation, about the services that you're delivering to your members and to other folks in Minnesota. And we just really appreciate you sharing a bit of that with us. If you don't mind, Representative Swedzinski, hey,
Madam, please. Just a quick question. Are we going to be asking testifiers questions as they come before us or waiting at the end?
If you have a question for the tribal leaders, I think that's fine, because I bet they have other things to do besides sit in tax committee for the next couple hours. So.
That's why I asked a
question. Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah.
Just a quick question. Just kind of from the current, you know, you – thanks for your testimony. You explained kind of your the plight of folks. What are you currently spending on these particular issues from your own tribal governments? And then how will you expend it? And, what is the new money as a percentage of what you're currently spending on these issues that are so important in your area?
Thank you. Thank you for that question. You know, from White Earth here, you know, like we described earlier, that we're the biggest tribe in Minnesota, and you know, and our gaming isn't like, you know, robust and is as big as the more metro type areas. I know back home that an example for you, Representative, is like our police force. You know, we spend over $3 million in our police force each year to protect our not only our constituents within our borders, but also all constituents of Minnesotans. You know, we have Winoman County that sits within our borders. Then we sit in the southern border of Clearwater and the northern border of Becker County. And a good example of Winoman County, our police force, which we don't get no reimbursement back from the state, and our dispatch is another part of it. Our dispatch is part of this too, is that we cover about 70% of those calls from Winoman County. So you think about what we do and how we help and how we contribute to not only the constituents of White Earth, but all members of the state of Minnesota when it comes to policing and also EMS and also fire. You know, our county, our township fire departments, White Earth has one, Twin Lakes, which is Natawash. We have one in Ogama. We have multiple fire departments throughout the reservation that we assist and we help and we support them. And we actually allocate money to them too to try to offset some of their hardships too. So as White Earth Nation, you know, we're here to not only, like I said earlier, is not here just to help our constituents, but help all constituents within our borders. And that's one thing that I'm really happy to say, that we're here to protect and to protect and serve. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman Fairbanks.
And from Red Lake's perspective, you know, we, there's a common misconception that we have gaming money, right? We're in a very rural area, and a lot of our people that come to our casinos come from Canada. And so we've had some really tough times financially from COVID, et cetera, et cetera. We shut down the casinos for a while, and we've always had budget limitations. And so this past year, we had to make budget cuts as a nation. And so we're already underfunded when it comes to the police, you know, all the necessary service, health care. We have an embassy down here. We provide those supportive services to the homeless people here in Minneapolis, St. Paul area, and Bemidji. We provide a whole slew of services. And so this would essentially help us maintain services that are critical for those people. And so this money would be coming in and helping to, you know, really supplement a budget that's struggling. And so from our standpoint, it would allow us to continue really with underfunded services, right? They're already underfunded. I think we're funded about 30% of our healthcare needs. And so there's an example of, you know, we're making cuts to an already diminished budget. And so from that standpoint, we need much more, you know, to really serve the community members within these communities. We need much, much more. And so really, this is a great starting point, but it's barely even going to allow us to continue to provide the very limited amount of services we have with our current budget as a result of some of our budget constraints in Red Lake. So
We got to go to Representative Weiner. We have 40 people here to testify. So we'll kind of take a couple questions, and then we've got to get moving with the rest of the testimony. But Representative Weiner.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming here and testifying today. I was doing a little bit of research, and you brought up some numbers, and I just wanted to make sure my stuff was correct. You had 10,000 band members with Leech Lake. Red Lake is about 17. Do you know the total number of tribes, members out of the 11 different tribes? I came up with about 57,000, what I found on the internet. Does that number seem accurate?
Yeah, I think it's around 60,000 is the number that was told to me. And so the other piece of this is that those are enrolled tribal members, and so we have descendants too. And so we serve all of our members, our descendants, the communities that live within our reservation. And I'll use this as an example. We put up Minobima Disneyland. It's an affordable housing complex here in Minneapolis, and we serve everyone. And so all people that need affordable housing are eligible for those services. And so when we serve individuals, we serve the entire community. And so when we were working on the Wall of Forgotten Natives, we were serving all the homeless people there. And that's a direct result of you can't just serve part of the population, right? If we're going to really deal with some of these issues when it comes to homeless, et cetera, you have to serve the entire population. And so that's what we do. We open our arms to everyone. And so from that standpoint, it's 60,000 band members, but then you talk about all the descendants and people within that community too. You know, we're not going to shut our doors on any person that's struggling.
Sure. All
right. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it. And, you know, I think it provided some good perspective for us as we consider this moving forward.
Thank you, Gretchen. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, and also community members here. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks so much for your leadership on this. All right. Up next, we're joined by Commissioner Marion Green, happens to represent me. Welcome to the committee, Commissioner.
Thank you, esteemed constituent and Chair Gomez and members. My name is Marion Green. I'm the Hennepin County Commissioner for District 3, and thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Communities in every corner of Minnesota are struggling as housing costs rise faster than wages. Many of those impacted can least afford it, including seniors aging in place, young families, immigrant families who are in their first home. The housing crisis is acutely felt in the growing number of Hennepin County families and children experiencing homelessness. Since the end of the statewide emergency rental assistance and the eviction moratorium, the number of families entering shelters has outpaced the number of families exiting at a ratio of 2 to 1. That means there are more than 250 families and more than 500 children in shelter today. Just this last month, Hennepin County needed to approve an additional $17 million in local funds to support these operations to meet our shelter all commitment to our families. We strongly support the provisions in this bill that target state resources for safe and stable housing, including expanding property tax refunds, simplifying the renter's credit, establishing a local affordable housing aid program, and boosting the local homelessness prevention aid. The additional local homeless prevention aid will allow the county to reach significantly more families and more youth who are at risk of homelessness. Counties are responsible, as you know, for the delivery of essential services to every Minnesotan, including health and human services, public safety, criminal justice, infrastructure, and many other services mandated by the state. Critical to the success of the county partnership with the state is sufficient and consistent county program aid. We support the additional $100 million for the CPA program and support inflation adjustments into the future. Equally important to tackle is the impact of inflation on local governments by removing the state sales tax on local public works projects. This will help every single Minnesota community across the state deliver public works projects while relieving pressure on property taxes. We, along with a broad coalition of local governments, school districts, nonprofits, and labor groups, support the sales tax exemption on construction materials and hope that you will make this change permanent. I want to thank you again for the opportunity to be here and for advancing this important legislation.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Green. Up next is Katie Topinka, and on deck is Nathan Jessen.
Good morning, Chair Gomez and committee members. My name is Katie Topinka. I'm the Director of Intergovernmental Relations for the City of Minneapolis. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today and for all of your work on the tax bill. I'd like to echo many of the comments that Commissioner Green just made, that we, the City of Minneapolis, is grateful for the property tax relief provisions in this bill and also the many provisions that will help our residents with housing affordability. The city supports the $100 million increase to local government aid and the changes to the formula that will help account for inflation. As a city that is more than 50% renters, many of whom are housing cost burdened, we greatly appreciate the renter's credit relief and the local affordable housing aid, along with the increase to local homelessness prevention aid so that we can keep residents safely and stably housed. We are also appreciative of the homestead refund included in this bill that will help keep housing affordable for our low to moderate income homeowners. I'd also like to comment briefly on Article 12, Section 11 related to U.S. Bank Stadium. There will soon be sufficient revenue in the stadium reserve to pay off the entire public investment in stadium construction, and the City of Minneapolis supports this happening. The City also supports the provision of this bill that eliminates the requirement that the City of Minneapolis continues to make debt service payments on bonds after the bonds are repaid in full. The City does have significant obligations to the stadium beyond the construction debt, but it simply doesn't make sense to continue to make debt service payments toward a debt that no longer exists. So we look forward to continued conversations about that provision and the other provisions in this bill. And thank you again for all of your work and for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you very much for being here. Up next, Nathan Jessen, Matt Hilgart's on deck. I think this, like, people coming up and sitting at the table thing is a good idea. Like, let's keep doing that, because then we can kind of move from person to person. Mr. Jessen.
Glad I set a good example, Matt.
As always.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Nathan Jessen. I represent the League of Minnesota Cities. I just want to thank Chair Gomez for including the Property Tax Division report, the past the division that Chair Listigard and others put together that takes kind of a holistic approach to rising property taxes by providing direct property tax relief, aids to local governments, and limiting property tax shifts. I also want to thank the committee for including the construction sales tax exemption that's proposed in this bill. While it's only proposed to be in law through 2024, we think it's a critical component of this bill. It reflects the original intent of the law passed in 2013 that provided the exemption in the first place that technically exists, but not really in practice because the process to receive it is too onerous for cities to comply with. Going retroactive to July 1, 2021 also makes sense, since that's the last time an omnibus tax bill became law. Since this committee heard so many individual proposals with retroactive effective dates, providing the broad exemption retroactively is the best way to ensure that cities are treated equally and one doesn't receive more preferential tax treatment than the other just because they have more resources to move a bill through the legislature. It's also an essential time for this bill as proposed here, since funding from the IIJA along with state bonding provide a historic opportunity to fix and modernize poor and unsafe public infrastructure. This proposal will ensure that those dollars go further, especially during a time of high inflation. And it also reflects good tax policy. It makes no more sense for the state to collect sales tax from local governments than it would local governments to collect property taxes from state-owned buildings. So just want to thank the committee for the inclusion of that proposal specifically. We also have a letter that has additional detail on numerous other provisions that you can reference. So I just want to thank the committee for the time to testify today.
Thank you very much. Matt Hilgart, Patricia Naumann is on deck.
Madam Chair, Chair Liz Lagarde, and members of the committee, my name is Matt Hilgart. I work for the Association of Minnesota Counties. AMC represents all of Minnesota's 87 counties. I want to thank you, the members and staff, for all your hard work to put together this year's omnibus tax bill. For members who haven't had the privilege to sit on the House Property Tax Division, I want to reiterate that comprehensive property tax relief has been voted a top priority by all Minnesota's 87 counties. And our membership has defined this priority to include three legislative approaches. One, providing direct tax relief through amplifying existing property tax relief mechanisms such as the homestead exclusion, targeted property tax refund, and senior property tax deferral program. Two, protecting tax base from continued erosion by way of tax rate or tier reductions, increases to existing tax exclusions, or new categorical property tax exemptions that all serve to just shift taxes to other taxpayers. And three, strengthening the state's commitment to local governments by restoring the purchasing and levy buy-down power of categorical aid categories such as CPA, which serve to reduce property tax burdens and positively impact every single property taxpayer in Minnesota. By all three of these measures, House File 1938 is a resounding success in AMC's opinion. I want to also thank the chair for her continued dedication to creative policy approaches to systemic and statewide crises, whether that be housing affordability aid program offered by Chair Howard, annotated approach to payment in lieu of taxes authored by Chair Liz Lagarde, or the commitment to eradicate youth and family homelessness through the homelessness prevention section in this bill. This bill uses tax policy in a way to try to alleviate many of the pressures and negative outcomes counties have testified to in various committees throughout session. In addition to these measures, we appreciate your inclusion of the construction material sales tax provision, the new resource allocation to workforce and affordable home ownership development program by Representative Norris, a rededication of the solid waste management tax to SCORE and recycling related activities by Chair Hornstein, an investment in the work that our local SWCD partners do throughout the state, Representative Ryer, the tax delinquency rate reductions advocated by Legal Aid and authored by Representative Lee, a revision of last year's mandated property tax supplementary notification system, and Representative Anderson's solar tax classification clarification. Taken together, Madam Chair, these measures all underscore your acknowledgement of the vital role local governments play in our communities throughout the state and your commitment to restoring the state and local partnership. Counties, thank you for this commitment and look forward to working alongside you in the coming weeks to advocate for provisions included in this bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hilgart. Up next, Patricia Nauman. Matt Mossman, you're on deck.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Patricia Nauman. I'm the Executive Director of Metro Cities, representing cities across the metropolitan area at the state legislature. Thank you for the opportunity to comment today on the tax bill. I just want to note a few provisions. Metro Cities does support the changes to the local government aid formula that will be better reflective of current city needs, as well as the appropriation increase in the bill. Local government aid is a longstanding program that is a vital component of the state and local partnership, and these updates and the appropriation increase will help to ensure that the program continues to be adequate to its task, which is making sure that cities across the state and the region, of course, can provide public services without over-relying on the property tax. To this end, Metro Cities also does support the expansion in the bill of the direct property tax relief programs, as well as the homestead market value exclusion changes, both of which recognize the challenges with rising property tax valuations and their challenges for property taxpayers. Metro Cities also does support the inclusion of the local affordable housing aid that will help provide cities with flexible revenue to continue to address local housing needs that are ongoing, of course. And with respect to the construction sales tax exemption, I could echo what Mr. Jessen has said. Metro Cities does appreciate the inclusion of this provision in the bill and, of course, does continue to support a permanent process for the exemption so that cities are able to access the construction sales tax exemption that they are entitled to access under current law, but for the cumbersome nature of the process. And finally, Madam Chair and members, Metro Cities does support the changes to the tax increment financing laws that are in the bill that were the product of a lot of work with the Office of the State Auditor with city organizations and others. Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for the opportunity to comment today.
Thank you very much, Ms. Nauman. Mr. Mossman, you're up. Jessica Webster is on deck.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Matt Mossman with the Minnesota Inter-County Association, representing 15 counties, including four suburban and 11 counties in greater Minnesota. I want to thank you, Chair Gomez, for bringing forward an omnibus tax package that really prioritizes property tax relief and the renewal of the state and fiscal partnership and inclusion of the local property tax division report. Property taxes are the second largest form of taxes that Minnesotans pay, and I think state auditor's State of Main Street report that was just released yesterday really sums up the trends that we've been experiencing in the over-reliance on property taxes with the words, quote, "The share of city, county, township revenues from property taxes have increased as the share of revenue from intergovernmental revenues has decreased over the past 20 years. For those reasons, we have strongly supported the increase in the county program aid in a way that really restores the relationship between the state and local governments in funding local community services, and we appreciate Chair Liz Lagarde's authorship of that bill and the increase of the $100 million increase, as well as the increase in the per acre payments to PILT lands. I really want to call out and underscore the annual adjustment of these appropriations and per acre payments in future years. The growing reliance on property taxes and other local revenue sources, like local option sales taxes, very closely parallels the elimination of those annual adjustment factors from law that had been intended to keep state appropriations consistent with rising costs, and we support the restoration of those appropriation adjustments. At the same time, access to reliable, affordable housing has been a growing challenge across the state and impacts all communities, counties, and cities. We appreciate the support of the increased funding for local for homeless prevention aid and the creation of the statewide local affordable housing program championed and authored by Representative Howard. In addition, I want to underscore that House File 1938 makes significant progress towards two longstanding budget and tax policy priorities that have had broad bipartisan support, and that is the inclusion of the refund of sales tax, the sales tax construction materials refund for all local governments and nonprofits for 2 years, and we look forward to working to make this permanent over time, and the redirecting of solid waste management tax revenues that have always been intended for funding solid waste reduction, reuse, and recycling efforts that are led by counties from the general fund to SCORE grants. Finally, we support expansion of the senior deferral, adjustment of the market value homestead exclusion, the temporary increase in the targeted homeowners refunds, the elimination of the 10% floor on interest rate charged for delinquent tax debt and repurchase agreements, and the increased homeowner refunds and streamlining of the renter's credit. All of those programs will help make property taxes more affordable for Minnesotans. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mossman. Up next, Jessica Webster, and on deck is Anna Odegaard.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jessica Webster. I'm a staff attorney with Legal Aid. I use she, her pronouns, and thank you for the opportunity to testify today. First, Legal Aid is deeply grateful that this bill is crafted to target resources to those who need them the most. There's a lot of good in this bill today, but I just want to lift up the inclusion of the Minnesota Child Tax Credit, something that we have zealously advocated to the federal government that they continue, and when it lapsed, we implored the legislature last year to act. So we are excited and grateful that the House is joining the governor this session on this evidence-based practice that can dramatically cut child poverty in Minnesota. And while we appreciate that the House's largest child tax credit does go to the lowest income families with children and that the number of children is not capped, which is amazing, Legal Aid is still holding out a little hope that we can get closer to $1,000 for every child living below the poverty line. We just know that that $1,000 mark can be transformative for kids. And finally, I just wanted to note something that Chair Gomez said yesterday in a press conference when she said, "It's more obvious today than ever that we have collectively accepted the unacceptable, from people sleeping outside to children living in poverty." And I just wanted to underscore these comments because in my 18 years as a legal aid attorney, through deep deficits and recessions, we've asked an awful lot of low-income folks for the alleged good of the state. We have starved systems and services for basic needs. So during this time of tremendous economic prosperity, it feels more fair than ever to have provisions in this bill asking the wealthiest in the state to also contribute their fair share for the good of the state, because we've never hesitated when we're demanding it of those with the least. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much, Ms. Webster. Up next is Anna Odegaard, and on deck is Deborah Fitzpatrick. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, I'm Anna Odegaard. I'm the director of the Minnesota Asset Building Coalition. We are a statewide coalition of 135 nonprofit organizations. Together, we advocate for policies that provide greater opportunities for lower-income Minnesotans, pardon me, to achieve financial stability and prosperity by building assets. Many of the investments in this bill align with the principles and work of MABC. I'll highlight just a few. In particular, we support the simplified access to the renter's credit, as well as the one-time increase and the longer-term base increase in credits people can claim. This approach balances immediate tax relief with long-term investment in housing stability for Minnesota renters, which is critical for the communities that we work in. We support the child and working family credit increases and especially appreciate that the structure of the credit maximizes the impact on the lowest income families. Including families who file using a tax identification number is an important equity, an important and long overdue equity measure. We appreciate the committee's attention to this population. We appreciate the improvements to the Minnesota Education Credit, updating the income thresholds and simplifying the income calculations. This credit makes educational activities from music lessons to after-school tutoring to driver's education more affordable, ensuring students across the state have access to these opportunities. And we're grateful that your bill includes ending the use of revenue recapture for collecting medical debt on behalf of private hospitals. The tax relief in this bill provides opportunities for families to budget, save for emergencies, and invest in a brighter future for themselves and their children. Seizing a person's tax refund to offset medical debt, which is almost always unchosen and unplanned, undermines the principles of this bill, and we appreciate your support. We also understand that prohibiting revenue recapture for ambulance services was not included because of broader structural challenges in EMS financing that need to be taken care of first, and we hope we can be allies on that issue. Last, the tax credit outreach appropriation in this bill is critical. The most well-structured, well-funded, equitable tax relief measures are just good ideas unless people can successfully access them. And this bill creates that access by funding education and outreach and assistance with tax preparation so that the tax relief in this bill reaches Minnesota families. Thank you so much for your hard work on behalf of all of Minnesota communities.
Thank you very much, Ms. Odegaard. Deborah Fitzpatrick. On deck is Ethan Vogel.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. Members of the committee, my name is Deborah Fitzpatrick. I'm the Director of Policy and Research at Children's Defense Fund Minnesota. The Children's Defense Fund Leave No Child Behind mission is to ensure every child has a healthy start, a head start, a fair start, a safe start, and a moral start in life, and successful passage into adulthood with the help of caring families and communities. Through our Bridge to Benefits and Economic Stability Indicator tools, we work with partners across the state to ensure families can access and combine the public supports, including tax credits, that they need to achieve economic stability and thrive. We want to thank you, Chair Gomez, and the committee for joining the governor in centering the reduction of child poverty and the creation of a new child tax credit in the proposal before us today. Also importantly, this proposal fixes the ironically cruel state and federal family-focused tax credit feature of providing less or no support to children and families with the lowest incomes or ITIN status. In a state as prosperous as ours, it is not only the morally right thing to do, but the smart thing. We need the gifts of every child to continue to flourish as a state into the future, and poverty currently robs all of us of too much talent by placing an unnecessary barrier in front of hundreds of thousands of Minnesota children. In our listening sessions with families in every corner of the state, we heard about the power and the dignity of having a few extra dollars to put where a family needs it most. The research backs up what we heard, with the National Academy of Science finding that even $1,000 can make a lifetime of difference, with improved educational achievement, health outcomes, and lifetime earnings. At CDF, we are proud to work alongside Legal Aid, the Minnesota Budget Project, and the Catholic Conference to garner the support of more than 66 organizations for a Minnesota Child Tax Credit. The letter from this group is in your packet. All of us look forward to fighting with you to move Minnesota forward by passing the strongest possible child tax credit this session. Thank you for your vision and leadership.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Up next is Ethan Vogel. On deck is Nan Madden. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Ethan Vogel. I serve as legislative director with AFSCME Council 5. AFSCME Council 5 is a public and nonprofit labor union. We represent more than 43,000 workers in Minnesota. On behalf of our union, I want to express our strong support for the A23 amendment to House File 1938 and our gratitude to you, Chair Gomez, for putting together an omnibus tax bill that prioritizes working Minnesotans and focuses relief on those who need it the most. There's a lot to be excited about in this proposal, far too many things to list in 2 minutes, so I'll just say thank you for your work and for leading with your values, and I'd like to specifically express our support for two items. First, thank you for including new revenue in this proposal in the form of the fifth tier income tax on income over $1 million, 1% increase. It only makes sense to us to ask those who have benefited the most from our economy to contribute more toward our shared needs and priorities. Delivering excellent public services requires sustainable investments in those services, and this is a fiscally responsible way to ensure our state budget is well positioned now and into the future to make the investments Minnesotans want, expect, and deserve. Second, thank you for including significant increases for local government aid and county program aid, and for accounting for future funding increases for these items as well. And thank you to Chair Lisselgaard for your work and advocacy on these funding items. LGA and CPA investments will help control the rise of property taxes without sacrificing services, which means every taxpayer will benefit from the increases. And it's refreshing to see us continuing to make progress, significant progress, toward rebuilding the funding for LGA and CPA. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Vogel. Up next is Nan Madden, and on deck, Catherine Walker.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nan Madden. I'm director of the Minnesota Budget Project. Thank you for this opportunity to testify today on the House Omnibus Tax Bill. Thank you, Chair Gomez, and members of the committee for putting together a bill that would unleash the power of the tax code to address real challenges Minnesotans are facing and build a stronger, more equitable future. I'll lift up a few of the highlights for us in this bill. We strongly support the creation of a child tax credit, which is based on the remarkable success of the federal expanded child tax credit in reducing child poverty and hardship, especially among the lowest income children, children of color, and children living in rural areas. The child tax credit proposal in this bill has many design principles to have a powerful anti-poverty impact, including features to ensure that the most struggling families get the full value of the credit. As a result of incorporating a child tax credit component and making other improvements to the working family credit, Minnesotans in every part of the state would have resources to succeed in the workforce and in their roles as parents and caregivers. As this bill moves forward into conference, I urge you to continue to make transformational tax credits for children and families a top priority. We are also very excited about the inclusion of game-changing provisions to simplify and expand the renter's credit. This is one important step to bring down the cost of housing for families, workers, seniors, and people with disabilities. Also, thank you for including provisions so that Minnesotans who file their taxes with a federal ITIN are treated fairly in our tax code. This bill recognizes the importance of addressing longstanding areas of disinvestment across the budget and that the majority of the 24-25 projected surplus is temporary. Raising revenues through provisions including the fifth tier or millionaire's income tax bracket will help ensure Minnesota can sustainably fund important public services that contribute to our shared prosperity. And finally, while I appreciate that this bill does not include a full exemption, it's disappointing that the Social Security exemption in this bill has gotten larger compared to when House File 1040 was heard in committee. Keeping any changes to Social Security exemptions as narrowly targeted as possible is important to protect funding for public services that Minnesota seniors, their children, grandchildren, and neighbors count on. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Catherine Walker. On deck is Keith Franke.
Thank you to the chair and members of the committee. My name is Catherine Walker, and I've been a home care worker since spring of 2020. I'm here as a member of SEIU Healthcare Minnesota and Iowa. I'm here in support of the House Omnibus Tax Bill, House File 1938. I care for my nephew who is on the autism spectrum. I love helping him learn new life skills to help him get ready to go out in the world. I'm excited right now to be helping him learn skills so he can go off to college in the fall. I'm here today on tax day to show my support for us building a state where everyone pays their fair share so we have the ability to fund programs like home care for Minnesotans across the state. I grew up with Christian parents who taught me people who have more to share with others. Whether it is your talent, skills, or money, you share what you have with for the benefit of all. Our tax system should be that way. No matter how much money you have, all of us will need to care for ourselves or for our loved ones. Our union reached a contract agreement this year with the state with some historic wins, including a 25% wage increase to $20 per hour in 2025. We also won a wage scale and a one-time $1,000 retention bonus to award longtime caregivers. These changes are so important. My nephew doesn't yet have a home care worker lined up for when he goes to college several hours away because there aren't enough people who can and will do this job. This happens to many people, and we can fix this. The pandemic really showed what kind of strain has been put on the healthcare system and the need for the care needed for older Minnesotans. We're going to get more and more people wanting in-home care. We have proven there aren't enough nursing homes and people want to stay home. This isn't just about right now. This isn't just about me. This is about the seniors and people with disabilities who need and deserve quality care. If we ask more of the wealthiest Minnesotans, we can collectively benefit from the investment in Minnesota, in its infrastructure, in its people. It's common sense, and I'm here today to support the ongoing work to make this a reality. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your work. Keith Franke, I don't know if I should call you Representative Franke or if that's like a demotion from your current position, but we are thrilled to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members. Keith Franke, Protect Our Charities. You know, I was also going to add that I wasn't sure if I should bring treats. the first time I've testified on a bill. On
well, they would always spectrum. They would always be most welcome, as
you know. If it wasn't for traffic, donuts would have been here. I'll have to put that on the agenda next time. So once again, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members. Good to see you all. I just, before I get to my statement, I would like to add that in your packet, I did send along a list of 1,100 plus charities, and I would hope that you would go through this list and see the impact that what potentially may happen in this tax bill could happen all over our state. Now, I'm sure, like I would do, first I would go to the point and see how it would affect my district or my communities. And the types of organizations, because when you go through this, you will honestly be amazed at the scope and spectrum of the different types of organizations that are in here. Just the first two pages alone are American Legion, so a shout out to our veterans. So I'll get to my statement, and I'll try to be brief. As you all know, I'm very passionate about our charities and our small businesses that this has become. I was hoping to come today and thank the chair and the committee for a nice huge tax break for charities, but with what's proposed to possibly happen with electronic poll tabs, a significant loss of revenue, the size of a tax break is almost nothing. And depending upon how you read the language, tax cut on zero is less than zero for these charities and these small businesses. So, once again, I want to thank you. I am here to testify on a provision in the tax bill regarding electronic poll tabs that appears on page 251 in the tax bill. This provision was never included in a bill, never received a hearing. Yesterday at 11 a.m., the tax committee posted the bill with this language. Testifiers were expected to read a 300-page bill and told by staff they must sign up by 5 p.m. to have their voices heard the night before a hearing at 9 a.m. This lack of openness, transparency is deeply disappointing for the effect that this may have on the entire state of Minnesota charities. Let me correct a misconception that I keep hearing. In its February 27, 2023 decision, the Minnesota Court of Appeals did not rule that existing games utilized open all features were illegal or needed to be changed. This was confirmed by the Assistant Attorney General, who spoke at the March Gambling Control Board meeting. The Assistant Attorney General said at the GCB meeting that games could continue to be approved in the manner they have been approved since September 2012. In fact, since the first e-poll tag games were approved by the Minnesota Gambling Control Board in 2012, two administrative law judges have rejected arguments that e-poll tab games violate the law. Minnesotans overwhelmingly support maintaining e-poll tabs in their current form. A recent statewide survey conducted on our behalf of our organization found that 79% of the state voters support maintaining e-poll tabs in their current form. In summary, no legislative action needs to happen. Minnesotans from all walks of life and from all backgrounds see firsthand the difference electronic charitable gambling makes in our communities every day. In the essence of time, I'm just going to stop there.
Thank you.
I'm sure you're going to hear more from me. All of you will. I also did not get it entered into the record, but I have a letter here. I'll put some up here, or you can find me afterwards, signed by over 170-plus charities, myself, Allied Charities, the American Legions, that we sent to the Gambling Control Board on this issue. I'll be available for any questions. Most of you know how to reach out and find me. If not, I'm sure any one of my colleagues on both sides of the aisle will know how to get a hold of me. So thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Up next is Sam Kruger, and then on deck is Rachel Jenner. Welcome to the committee. Please just introduce yourself as you're going ahead with a couple minutes of testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you so much for having me in today. My name is Sam Krieger. I'm the executive director of the Electronic Gaming Group. We're a trade association that represents the manufacturers, distributors, and many of the nonprofit operators of electronic charitable gaming equipment and software. I'm here today to speak on Article 12 of the bill in relation to the electronic pull tab provisions. Electronic pull tabs now account for 54% of all charitable gambling done in Minnesota. That's more than half of what's going to be a $4.5 billion industry in the state this year. Last year, charitable gaming brought in $180 million in tax revenue to the state, and we expect that number to increase to about $200 million this year. Again, half of that number will come from electronic pull tabs. The open all feature in question today has been a part of electronic pull tab games since their inception in 2012. And believe it or not, this feature is also present on paper games. The Gambling Control Board defines 3x3 windowed games as games whose prize lines can be revealed individually or simultaneously. For this reason, the open all feature is one of the design pieces that actually make these games true analogs of their paper counterparts. But at the end of the day, this bill goes far beyond removing a singular feature from this bill. If the intent of the author is to remove this feature, they could simply add two words to 12B3, and instead, this bill strikes and modifies existing statute that redefines what it means to be a paper pull tab facsimile, and therefore what an electronic pull tab is allowed to be and has been for more than a decade. Additionally, there has never been any issues with the prize structures or payouts of electronic games. So why is this also mentioned in the bill if this bill is simply meant to change the way these games are revealed? This bill is also vague about its implementation. Before a provision of such gravity is adopted by the legislature, we need to know exactly how this will impact the industry as it stands. For example, if this is passed into law, would all games which currently have this feature be illegal on the day following enactment? If the games are required to be modified, there would need to be new rules. Given the new definition of electronic pull tabs, what would need to be changed in order for these games to be reapproved? We have no idea. But what we do know is that this bill will inherently hurt Minnesota's charities. When you make a product take longer to use, people will use less of that product. So just from a volume standpoint, this will hurt Minnesota charities. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Krieger. Excuse me. Rachel Jenner, and on deck is John Wayne Barker. Welcome to the committee. Please just introduce yourself as you're getting started.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Rachel Jenner. I'm the Executive Director of Allied Charities of Minnesota. We represent the approximately 1,100 licensed charities who conduct charitable gambling in Minnesota. They include veteran service organizations such as American Legions, many of whom are here today, fraternal and civic organizations, youth sports, and a variety of other charities. I thank former Representative Keith Frankie for bringing that list because it will show you the diversity of the organizations that make up our members. We are strongly opposed to the provision in the House tax bill that would change electronic pull tab games by eliminating the so-called open all feature and severely restricting how our games currently operate. These features have been allowed by the Gambling Control Board since pull tabs were introduced in 2012. E-pull tabs are a Minnesota success story. They have grown in popularity over the past 10 years and generated $1.9 billion in fiscal year 2022. Overall, our organizations in that same year were able to donate $131 million. I know that might sound like a small amount when you're looking at a $17.5 billion surplus, but for our organizations and communities, that $131 million is changing lives every day. We're paying for extracurricular activities, we are paying for poverty assistance, we recently went into some urban schools and put in equipment that allowed their sports programs to be able to benefit in the same way that the suburban schools who have bigger budgets were benefiting their kids. And we hear every day on how important these programs are because it's bringing kids into community. It's allowing them mentorship opportunities that they don't have elsewhere. It's providing them programs that without our funding would not exist. So these are opportunities that we feel cannot be taken from the youth across Minnesota. There are also VFWs and American Legions that are providing community space that would not exist without the benefits of charitable gambling. The removal or modification of these current game features for electronic pull tabs enacted by the legislature would be devastating to our charities. Some estimates show that removing the open all feature could lead to a 25 to a 60% reduction in revenue. That's a big swing. These are games that are not operated anywhere else in the country, so we have no ability to model the data to say what the impact will be. We can't predict how this will affect our industry, but we do know that removing something like an open all feature will slow down the rate of play, because if a player can click once to play now and has to click three times to play in the future, it slows down how quickly they can pay or play the games, which will reduce the revenue that the games generate. Even at the conservative estimate of a 25% reduction in play, that would be $67 million a year. And that drop in revenue to us would also mean that the state would receive $20 million less in tax revenue. While this legislative action may seem harmless, it could have very costly outcomes for us. Please understand that e-poll tabs have now surpassed paper poll tabs as the top source of charitable gambling revenue. This is not the time to roll back something that is working so well for us. You will be sending us into the dark ages and forcing games on us that no one else in the country is implementing because of how antiquated they would be. We also are concerned about not having a timeline to implement any changes. As a typical electronic game currently takes 12 to 18 months from development to testing and then to have the final approval from the Gambling Control Board, we would need at least a timeline of that length. And if we inundate the Gambling Control Board with new games that need approval, this timeline may need to be expanded. So we need to add some sort of timeline to allow us to redesign and implement games that would be in compliance with the law. The bottom line from the perspective of our 1,100 charities across Minnesota is that the tax relief we need needs to be more meaningful and that no legislative changes are needed on e-poll tabs. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. John Wayne Barker, up next is Ray Kane.
Chair Gomez, representatives, good morning. My name is John Wayne Barker, and I'm the CEO of Merrick, Inc., a nonprofit 501c3 day program serving nearly 400 adults with intellectual or developmental disabilities located at 3210 Labor Road in St. Paul. We are also one of over 1,100 charitable gambling organizations in the state of Minnesota, and operate 25 sites in Dakota, Ramsey, and Washington County. The proceeds from our gambling activities are critical to us as a nonprofit to supplement our insufficient Medicaid rates, allowing us to purchase needed equipment to promote client work opportunities, fund life enrichment activities, and support our self-advocacy programs. I see that there's some reduction of the combined receipts tax in this bill. Still, the revisions being proposed in 34, 349.11 are a big deal, because ETABs now account for the majority of our net proceeds, and anything that diminishes their playability, and that is certainly the intent of this legislation, will negatively impact the 1,100 charitable gambling organizations in the state and thereby reduce their ability to fund important initiatives in their local communities. How is that so, you may ask? Well, let me use a TV remote to explain. You want to change the channel on your TV. You choose a channel, they choose a game. You hit enter, they hit play. And now with this bill, you have to enter twice more on your TV remote before the channel changes, and they have to touch the screen another two times to open up each window. For people that purchase 100 ETABs, that is 200 extra touches that will slow down the game and make the game less enjoyable to play. Less fun, less play. So why would the legislature be asked to harm 1,100 nonprofits in the state? I provided a handout late this morning that shows that ETABs are not similar to a slot machine, and the open all feature is not prohibited in state statute or rule as determined twice by an administrative law judge. Also, as reported by the Gambling Laboratories International, all ETABs games in the U.S. allow open all features like Minnesota ETABs, so we're not doing anything unusual. And finally, to my knowledge, no one has asserted that the open all feature has negatively impacted any other forms of legal gambling in Minnesota. And why the rush? Given there is no rational reason to change the format of ETABs, why would any representative support a bill that will take lawful purpose expenditures away that support police and fire departments, veterans groups, senior programs, youth sports, food shelves, and other nonprofits in our local community statewide? There is simply no winner in diminishing ETABs, and I urge you to vote no on any changes to Section 34911. Please do no harm to our local charitable gambling organizations. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Ray Kane, and on deck is Alan Lund. Please
Madam
proceed.
Chair,
thank you.
My name is Ray Kane. I'm the Department Service Officer for the American Legion Department of Minnesota. And we ask you guys, the committee, to support the current ETAB system in place right now. And we are looking to receive more tax deductions for our charities in Minnesota. The state of Minnesota American Legions are suffering right now with the current system they have in place. They're looking for money to keep their local posts open in our community. Not only are we going to lose on the open all feature being removed for organization and lose veterans programs, and that's what I want to talk about. We talk about numbers and we hear about numbers, but we're not going to talk about the impact for veterans. The impact on veterans in our community is going to be devastating. It's not going to hurt us. It's going to devastate us. My current position is I take care of veterans in the state of Minnesota. When a veteran is in need, I'm there to serve them. Janet Lorenzo, my assistant department service officer, we take care of veterans in the state of Minnesota, and that's going to be devastating to our program. Our Veterans Assistance Fund is funded by the American Legions across the state of Minnesota to assist veterans, to give them a lift up and support them when they're struggling with PTSD, homelessness. We give them an opportunity to fund them and say, hey, we're going to find a hotel for you. We're going to assist you. We're going to get you with your county service officer, and we're going to lift you up with those funds. But not only that, is the American Legions generate money for our community. And with those funds being deducted and losing funds with the open all feature being reduced, it's going to devastate food shelves. I can tell you right now, as I am a gambling manager for the St. Paul Park Newport Lions Club in the city of St. Paul Park, we will lose food programs in our city. Any further deductions in that? If you go to a food shelf, the dollar's not the same anymore. It's $2 to $3 to do what we're doing right now. Before, the dollar lasted a little longer, and I understand that. Things are changing, but we cannot continue to reduce income to the American Legions, to our charities. The kids in our school systems are going to suffer. We have to say, sorry, we can't provide you for your safety gear. The schools don't have the money, but the American Legions and our charities are generating that money to protect our kids' football helmets, school protective gear for soccer, single parents not being able to afford to put their kids in sports. We are giving money to our community to make sure things are happening. Some of our programs that we have are Boys State, Girl States programs. Legionville is where we have children go up in the state of Minnesota to teach them safety, crosswalk safety, bus safety. That's throughout the state of Minnesota. We talk about baseball programs, the American Legion baseball programs, where many of those players go to the minor leagues and into major leagues. We have hundreds of baseball programs in the state of Minnesota. And once again, we ask you to keep the ETABs like they are right now and not to eliminate the open all feature. But we also are asking you for further tax deductions. Okay. You know, we talk about 36% of our charitable gambling organizations are taxed. But we also forget about sometimes they're taxed 10% throughout the cities. So some of the American Legions and some of our nonprofits that are here are getting taxed 46% of their charitable organization's funding that is not going to the community. The state of Minnesota is one of the largest donations that we give out right now. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Up next, Alan Lund, and on deck is Reverend Vanessa Bradby. Please go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Alan Lund. I'm the gambling manager at the Osseo Maple Grove American Legion. I will speak in opposition to Article 12, Sections 10 and 14 that deal with charitable gambling. The House Omnibus Tax Bill contains a 1-2 punch to charities. Article 12, Section 10, is a 3.5% tax decrease to the highest current rate. The 36% max rate will be reduced to 34.75, which would lower my post's $250,000 annual tax bill to about $242,000. Our taxes are based on the money that we get to the bank. We get no deductions prior to paying our taxes. It's sales minus prizes, net receipts, is our tax base. Our Legion donates over $200,000 a year to youth, food insecurity, veterans, and deployed individuals. Currently, the state is our largest charity. That would not change with this bill being approved. Article 12, Section 14 turns electronic pull tabs back to 2012 when they came into existence. Charities paid for the $1 billion stadium 20 years early. Since that debt is now close to being paid, this portion of the bill is going to severely limit our ability to raise funds in the future. No one knows how deep the impact of this change would be, but estimates are upwards from 20 to 50%. You only have to look at the development of ETAB business from 2012 to see that the games offered the first 3 years were not well accepted by patrons. They did not want to play them. It was only after the game started changing in 2015, 2016 that patrons started appreciating what was being offered. Charities approved no ETAB games. Only the state approved ETAB games. Are we now saying that the state knowingly let charities offer illegal ETAB games for 11 years? If we were being supplied illegal games, why has it taken 11 years to address it? Is it because that's how long it took to pay for the stadium? If passed, this bill will have charities left holding the bag. Charities will be hobbled. What is the loss to anyone else conducting legal gambling in this state? Where is the harm that ETABs have done? This bill has an $8 to $10 million tax reduction to charities, but a potential loss of up to $200 million to us in what we can do for our state and for the people in need in our local communities. Any loss of business to the charities needs to be tied to tax reductions that would make the charities whole. Charities did nothing wrong. Why are we going to be the ones punished? Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Looks like Reverend Bradby isn't with us. Michael Dahl is up next, and on deck is Katie Schultz. Welcome to the committee. Please just state your name for the record as you get started with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Gomez, members of the committee. My name is Michael Dahl, and I am the Public Policy Director at Homeline, a statewide tenant advocacy organization. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of the language in House File 1938 that increases and expands the renter's credit, as well as creates a tax credit outreach appropriation, which provides resources for community partners to educate low-income folks about changes to tax credits they can avail themselves of. Let's face it, low-income renter households are struggling. For decades, renters have had to deal with housing costs that have increased beyond their means. According to the Minnesota Housing Partnership Report, State of the State Housing 2021, between 2000 and 2019, the median renter income in Minnesota increased by just 1%, while the median gross rent in the state increased by 14%. This is exacerbated by an incredible lack of supply. Minnesota lacks the 103,000 units of housing affordable and available to extremely low-income households. While we need the housing committees to address the issues I just mentioned, there is no denying the renter's credit provides much-needed assistance for eligible households who know about it. The proposed legislation is transformational in making eligibility more understandable to Minnesota renters. This on top of making thousands more households eligible. Thank you. Homeline hears about tenants who use the renter's credit, and it allows them to cover basic necessities. We ask many of them, and I'm going to show you. It's groceries, eyeglasses, medication, car repairs. It's not everything that they use it for, but when we talk to renters about what they use, they often give these responses. groceries, medications, eyeglasses, car repairs, things like that that are spent in the local community as something that they use the renter's credit for. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Katie Schultz, and on deck is Monica Hurtado.
Chair Gomez and members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to join you and testify in support of the omnibus tax bill. My name is Katie Schultz, and I am I work at Prepare and Prosper, which is Minnesota's largest volunteer income tax assistance program. Happy Tax Day. Our organization works with thousands of low to moderate income taxpayers and hundreds of volunteers each year, and it's core to our mission to assist Minnesota filers with getting an accurate income tax return filed and claiming all the tax benefits and credits that they're eligible for. I'm joining you today to express gratitude to the committee for many pieces of House File 1938 that prioritize and support low to moderate income taxpayers. These are the folks that Prepare and Prosper works with. One item in particular that my organization appreciates seeing in this bill is the simplification of the calculations used for the renter's credit, moving away from the complicated household income in favor of using adjusted gross income is going to streamline filing, processing, and receiving of this critical tax credit that's targeted toward our lowest income taxpayers. Along with this major improvement and simplification to the renter's credit calculations, Prepare and Prosper is grateful to see that the committee plans to allocate funds toward outreach, highlighting the changes of this credit. Earlier this year, our organization surveyed taxpayers that we work with and found that people will appreciate getting the renter's credit earlier in the year. However, this is a change, moves away from a long-standing tradition of people receiving the refund in the summer or fall. And so the success of this credit transitioning to the income tax return relies on taxpayers getting this message about future changes multiple times from trusted partners. And the allocation of these funds will boost that effort by providing resources to organizations that work directly with renters. I also want to use a portion of my testimony to thank the committee for taking significant and long overdue steps toward fully including I-10 filers in our state tax system by expanding who is eligible for homestead status and thereby the homestead credit refund for homeowners, as well as ensuring that the redesigned child and working family credit is open to all eligible taxpayers and their families. Prepare and Prosper services include work as certified acceptance agents, assisting taxpayers apply for or renew ITIN numbers and file accurate tax returns. And hundreds of the taxpayers that we work with every year have been excluded from certain tax benefits in spite of their strong contributions to our state. And we strongly support these provisions to include ITIN filers. In addition to the items I've already highlighted, Prepare and Prosper is excited to see this bill improves equity of the state's dependent care credit and also significantly updates the K-12 education credit. Thank you again to the committee for the opportunity to testify today and for your hard work in making our tax code a more equitable one in Minnesota.
Thank you for your testimony. Monica Hurtado, welcome to the committee. Up next, or on deck is John Reynolds. Please go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Gomez and members of the committee. My name is Monica Maria Hurtado, and I'm the policy director for Voices for Racial Justice. We are a statewide organization that not only envisions a world without racism, but envisions a Minnesota that honors the power and culture of our indigenous, black, and communities of color. Voices for Racial Justice is also a part of the growing number of organizations committed to advancing racial justice and ending structural racism. I am originally from Colombia, and after 21 years of living here, it still amazes me how in the richest country of the history of the world, we have a number of unhoused people that only keeps growing, and also a disproportionate number of families of color who need to rent because the opportunities to own a home are less and less available, especially after COVID. This is why I'm here today to loudly express our support of the provisions in the omnibus tax bill that we think are going to have the greatest impact on those racial disparities. I'm talking about the expansion and simplification of the renter's credit, the state child tax credit, the ITIN filers who own their homes and who finally will be able to qualify for homestead status, and the money that will allow the Department of Revenue to give grants to nonprofits, which will help to get the word out about tax credits for our low-income communities. and also provide additional taxpayers' assistance. All of this is good news, and I came to express our support and appreciation to you all for that work. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. I think that Reverend Vanessa Bradby's joined us, so you're on deck. No, you're good. You should, John. I'm sorry. We'll go ahead with John Reynolds, and then we'll have Reverend Bradby be on deck. So please go ahead with your testimony. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair Gomez and members of the committee. I'm John Reynolds, the State Director for the National Federation of Independent Business. We represent over 10,000 small businesses in every corner of the state. First, I want to thank the chair and the committee for their work this year. We appreciate the inclusion of the pass-through entity tax changes that will reduce the tax burden for many small businesses across the state. As I mentioned when I testified on the underlying bill, most small businesses in the state are pass-through entities, and most entities organized as pass-throughs are very small businesses. However, we oppose the creation of the fifth-tier tax rate. While aimed at millionaires, this will hit the number of small business owners who are anything but and limit their ability to invest back in their business and back in their workers. It's also likely to hit small business owners who are nowhere near millionaires but only experience this level of revenue or this level of income on a one-time basis and rely on the proceeds to retire. So thank you again. Appreciate the opportunity to testify.
Thank you for your testimony. Welcome to the committee, Reverend Bradby. On deck is Beth Cadoon. Please introduce yourself for the record as you're getting started with your testimony.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Pastor Vanessa Bradby, and I'm the pastor of New Spirit United Church of Christ in Savage, Minnesota.
I'm sorry, Pastor Bradby, could you just pull the mic a little closer to you?
Sure. Is this
perfect.
Better?
Yep, that's way better. Thank you. Sorry to interrupt.
So I'm the pastor of New Spirit United Church of Christ in Savage, Minnesota, and I'm also an Isaiah clergy leader. And I'm here today because at every church where I have ever served, I have been approached by desperate mothers with young children asking if we could help them because they and their children were about to be evicted or because they had run out of food or even in one case because they barely covered their necessities and they couldn't afford any Christmas gifts for their kids. And I've always worked at small churches, so I've never had more than about $500 to give. But that has always made a difference for these families. It's the difference between homelessness and stability, between a hopeless holiday and one where children are fed and full of joy. And those people don't have a lobbyist, so that's why I'm here today. It's always been said that the budget is a moral document, and the choices that we make within it lay bare our priorities and our values as a state. Poverty isn't a natural disaster, and it's neither is it something that God decides to inflict on certain people. It's a policy choice, and we know this well because as a country we recently tried making different policy choices. When the Congress raised the child tax credit in 2021, it cut childhood poverty by half. So we know it works. And when I heard it hadn't been reauthorized, I felt deep grief and anger for those families I knew I would be seeing again because of this kind of policy decision. And that is why I was ecstatic when I heard that the child tax credit proposal that has come up now, we estimate it'll cut poverty in Minnesota by nearly 25%. Families who qualify will see up to $1,175 per child, and that's going to make a huge difference for people. It'll mean more children with a stable roof over their heads. It'll mean more children with fresh, nutritious food to eat, and more children will have warm mittens and boots and coats to get through our winters. So I'm here to thank Chair Gomez for prioritizing these people that Jesus in our own scriptures called the least of these. So thank you so much for supporting the child tax credit.
Thank you, Pastor Bradby. Welcome to the committee, Beth Cadoon, and on deck, Gavin Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Beth Cadoon. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I am here to testify in opposition to the tax increases contained in the bill of the new fifth tier and the corporate tax increases, as those two provisions will make Minnesota an extreme tax outlier and greatly harm our state's business climate. This bill includes tax increases of over $2.3 billion over the next 4 years. Plus, we're looking at a new $2.9 billion payroll tax when that's implemented and then billions of other taxes moving through the legislature. These will all add greatly to the cost of doing business in Minnesota. In today's world of global competition and increased mobility of both people and capital, tax costs do matter, and they impact decisions on where to invest and grow. We know cost is not the only component of the state's business climate, but it is certainly an important one. At 10.85%, Minnesota would have the fourth highest individual income tax in the nation, just behind California, New York, and Hawaii. This tax will greatly impact many pass-through businesses, and this means they have less money to invest in their employees, their equipment, and grow their businesses. Numerous research studies have found that high tax rates do negatively impact entrepreneurship, investment, and talent recruitment, the very items that we need for a growing economy. For the corporate income tax provision, we certainly do not support profit shifting, but international tax issues are a complex area with many geopolitical issues, complexities, plus high litigation risk. So this is really best left to be addressed at the federal level. In discussion last week, it was mentioned some other states have something similar. A few states do have an election. An election is completely different than a mandate. No other state in the United States or country in the world currently utilizes such mandatory worldwide combined reporting to calculate all corporate income taxes. I also included a handout in your packet regarding some of the economic data on compound, showing the compound annual growth for GDP and job growth based on the discussion last week. Minnesota used to outperform nationally in these two key economic indicators and did so for decades. Unfortunately, that is no longer the case, and Minnesota is now underperforming. For example, we ranked 36th in GDP in 2022 and 32nd in job growth. There are likely many reasons for this factor, but high taxes can certainly be a factor negatively impacting growth. We urge you to oppose the tax increases, as we do not want to create more disincentives for individuals and businesses to remain, invest, and grow in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Up next, Gavin Hansen, and on deck is Martha Njolomole. Please go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Gavin Hansen, and I'm here today on behalf of the Minnesota Business Partnership, which represents some of Minnesota's largest employers. I will be focusing my testimony on Article 1, Section 22, and Section 36. Minnesota currently enjoys a historic surplus of roughly $17.6 billion. The state's rainy day fund is full. Simply stated, raising taxes is completely unnecessary. And for many businesses and Minnesotans, it will be economically harmful. Currently, Minnesota's top individual tax rate is the sixth highest in the nation, and our corporate tax rate is second. If House File 1938 becomes law, it would propel Minnesota to the fourth highest income tax rate in the nation, behind only California, Hawaii, and New York, while we'd have the highest corporate tax rate in the nation. This would seriously harm Minnesota's competitiveness, discourage investment in the state, and further solidify Minnesota's reputation for having a hostile tax climate, all while the state is sitting on a historic $17.6 billion surplus, $5.5 billion of that is ongoing. Looking outside of Minnesota, policymakers in other states are reducing taxes. Last year, 11 states enacted personal income tax reductions. The year prior, another 13 states reduced their taxable bracket, 13 states enacted reductions. Our neighbor, Iowa, reduced their taxable brackets from 9 to 4 and lowered their tax rate from 8.53% to 6%. With the challenging demographic outlook, flattening workforce, and an ever-increasing mobile economy, Minnesota has numerous challenges that we should be working to help alleviate. On top of that, rival states are actively pursuing Minnesota companies for expansion elsewhere. We should be focused on policy that encourages expansion within our borders, keeping those high-paying jobs here, not showing them the door. Minnesota should be working to encourage exports and expansion into global markets, not penalizing that expansion. When Minnesota companies expand globally, it creates high-paying jobs here at home. Taxing foreign income at the state level puts Minnesota businesses at a serious competitive disadvantage. Requiring worldwide reporting would make Minnesota an extreme outlier. No other state requires mandatory worldwide reporting. The Minnesota Business Partnership asks that in a time of historic state surplus and facing a possible recession, you seek tax policy that will enable Minnesota businesses to continue to be competitive globally, not make Minnesota an even more challenging place to do business. The tax increases in House File 1938 could have wide-reaching economic impact that we should not be taken lightly. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Welcome to the committee, Martha Njolomole. On deck is Ryan Hamilton. Please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Martha Njolomole. I am an economist at the Center of the American Experiment. I am here to specifically speak in opposition to sections 22 and 26, which aim to create a fifth-year income tax bracket as well as expand the Minnesota Working Family Credit and create a child tax credit. According to the Minnesota Department of Revenue, in 2018, the bottom 30% of Minnesota households received 6% of our state household income. However, they paid no income taxes. In fact, after accounting for tax credits, they received money back from the state. On the other hand, the top 10% of Minnesota households received 43% of state household income, but they paid 60% of our income tax revenues. Rich Minnesotans, on average, contribute a disproportionate share of Minnesota's individual tax income tax revenues, and they also pay a disproportionate share of their income in income taxes. As a matter of fact, in 2018, the top 30% of all households paid 85% of all income taxes in the state. And while households in the bottom 20% paid zero income taxes, the top 10% paid 6%, a tax rate of 6%. As it currently stands, Minnesota is heavily reliant on income taxation. And because we have a progressive income tax system, we are heavily reliant on high income taxpayers. High income taxpayers are, however, leaving Minnesota, going to other low tax states like Florida. According to data from the U.S. Census Bureau, for example, in the period between 2011 and 2020, Minnesota lost 27,000 residents to other states. And while we gained residents for every income tax bracket under $50,000, we lost residents for every income tax bracket over $50,000. Creating a fifth-year income tax bracket will only worsen the out-migration of the rich that we've seen in recent decades. At the same time, expanding the working family credit and creating child tax credit will entirely eliminate tax liabilities for people at the bottom of the income ladder who already do not pay income taxes. This will narrow our income tax base, making our tax system more inefficient, at the same time threatening Minnesota's economy as well as the state budget. I urge the committee to seriously reconsider these two provisions in the bill. I have also provided a handout which explains all of this in more detail. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Thank you for your testimony. Ryan Hamilton, welcome to the committee. On deck is Sheila Vaney.
Chair Gomez and members of the committee, my name is Ryan Hamilton. I appear on behalf of the Minnesota Catholic Conference, the public policy voice of the Catholic Church in Minnesota. Family economics should be the top priority in state budget deliberations because families are doing the essential work of raising the next generation of Minnesota's builders, caregivers, and artists. We are encouraged that the governor opened the session by issuing a bold commitment to make Minnesota the best state in the nation to raise kids and be a kid. We're also encouraged that the chair and others in this body have expressed the desire to support that goal. Unfortunately, the tax target didn't match the pro-family rhetoric. This House CTC proposal has several very good elements that make the most of that target. It's permanent, it includes a cost of living adjustment, and it doesn't limit the number of kids per household who can receive the full credit. The Walsh-Flanagan proposal is still better, as it proposes a significantly larger fiscal commitment to children, and its structure makes it easier for parents to understand exactly what they are qualifying for. House File 1369 is still by far the best CTC proposal that this committee has heard because it would provide much needed economic relief and tax justice to the broadest range of households. Would that bill fit into this target? No. But to be the best, we must be willing to make bold moves. Instead of trying to fit families into a target, let's shift the paradigm. Let's make family economic security the target. A stable workforce, vibrant communities, and a sustainable tax base are all byproducts of economically secure families. Minnesota has the prosperity to provide $1 billion per year in direct relief to families. An audacious, fully funded CTC would accomplish the function of several other expenditures by providing families with the resources and agency to address their unique needs. That's the commitment necessary to make Minnesota the best state in the nation to live, work, and raise children. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Up next, Sheila Vaney, and on deck is Eric Harris-Bernstein. Welcome to the committee. Please just say your name as you're getting started with your testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. Sheila Vaney, Minnesota Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts Assistant Director. We represent the state's 440 elected SWCD supervisors and their 460 conservation professionals. On behalf of MASWCD, I want to extend our deep gratitude for the Soil and Water Conservation District aid provisions in the bill. We want to express that we understand there are serious challenges and funding needs that you are wrestling with, and we are deeply grateful that you saw fit to identify this as something that needs to get solved and permanently solved. So on behalf of our members statewide, thank you for including SWCD aid. The $22 million that's there in the bill for the FY24-25 biennium is the funding mix that we aimed to get secured this session in the out years as well. So we understand you have budget targets that drop down in the out years, and there are many competing needs for those limited funds. But the $14 million per year in the out years leaves us strapped for really being able to hire and retain the Soil and Water Conservation District staff that we need across the state right now as we're facing bottlenecks in our workload. So, Madam Chair and members, thank you very much.
Thank you. Eric Harris-Bernstein, and on deck is Lars Nagstedt.
Chair Gomez and members of the committee, my name is Eric Bernstein, and I'm director of We Make Minnesota, which is a coalition of labor and community groups united in support of a sufficient and equitable state budget. Thank you for the opportunity to come here today and testify in support of HF 1938. The House Tax Committee has heard a lot of good bills this session, and many of them are included in the omnibus this year. Our partner organizations and others here today have shared support for the new child tax credit, the renter's credit, increased aid to local governments, and two provisions that would create a fairer tax code by raising income tax rates on the highest earners and ending multinational tax avoidance by requiring worldwide reporting. This is where I would like to focus my remarks today, with a brief story from American history that illustrates the deep patriotism of this proposal. The Boston Tea Party is often thought of as a protest against taxation, but in truth, the colonists that dumped barrels of British tea into Boston Harbor on December 16, 1773, were actually acting reacting to an unfair tax cut for a large multinational corporation. Tea had been taxed in the colonies since the Townshend Act of 1767, but what changed in 1773 was that Parliament ended the taxation of tea in the colonies in order to rescue the East India Trading Company, which had fallen on financial hardship due to its involvement in speculative banking schemes in Europe. Our current corporate tax code is the codification of the sort of inequitable tax policies that Americans have despised since before they were Americans. The colonists were angry about unfair taxation that benefited the East India Trading Company and disadvantaged tea traders that were based in the U.S. So in more ways than one, we feel that this bill is true to our longest held egalitarian values of taxation, and it's a provision that everyone in this room could be proud of. We want to thank the Tax Committee for all of its work this session, and we're excited to see what comes out of our final conference report. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Lars Nagstedt. And on deck is Kirsten Morcombe. Thank you.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Lars Nagstedt. I'm the Policy Director for ISAIAH. ISAIAH is a multiracial, statewide, nonpartisan coalition of faith communities, black barbershops, child care centers, and other communities organizing for racial and economic justice in Minnesota. No matter what part of the state we live in, all Minnesotans want our children to get a great start in life. We are pleased the legislature is taking many steps this year to make sure that happens, and we see this bill as a key component. I want to quickly just highlight a few priorities. First, we're pleased to see major revenue raisers such as the fifth-tier income tax and worldwide combined reporting, which closes the loophole for offshore profits. This will make the tax code more fair, and the revenue can be used to address the many needs in our state, such as the crisis in early childhood care and education. Second, we're grateful for the increase in the education credit, which will allow more families to access after-school tutoring. This has been a priority of our Muslim coalition, which has been striving to close educational opportunity gaps. Third, the expansion of the renter's credit is an exciting step to address the affordable housing crisis and an excellent example of how this bill serves those who need it the most. Last, but certainly not least, we are grateful for the inclusion of the child tax credit to begin addressing the moral scourge of childhood poverty. We support the governor's plan to make Minnesota the best state in the nation for kids and families, and we think this bill is a good step towards doing that. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Welcome to the committee, Kirsten Morcombe. On deck is Ben Balio, if you want to come up. You can go ahead with your testimony.
Okay. Madam Chair and speakers of the committee, thank you for your time this morning. My name is Kirsten Morcombe. I teach sixth grade language arts in the Bloomington Public School District, and I'm currently on leave with Education Minnesota. It's been stated here already today by other speakers, but I will reiterate that the state budget is a moral document, and the taxes and revenue are concrete ways the state of Minnesota expresses its values and priorities. For decades, the state has claimed that public education was a priority, but then underfunded it and underfunded the students who depend on it for more than lessons. At my school, about 80% of students are eligible for free or reduced price lunch, and about 10% are classified as homeless or highly mobile, and that's just who we know of. This year, we welcomed a group of new refugees from the Middle East who are now part of our 20% ELL, English language learner population. Students come to us with all kinds of unmet needs, and it's up to us to meet those needs so that they can learn. Right across the hall from my classroom, we have a space called the Perch, because our mascot's a falcon. It's full of clothing, shoes, personal products, school supplies, and backpacks of food. We solicit outside donations, but more often than not, those things are donated by staff. In recent years, Bloomington has had to cut costs related to transportation. Middle school students in our district don't qualify for busing if they live within a 1.25 mile radius of the school. 1.25 miles in Bloomington is sometimes meaning that they cross under busy freeway entrances, like the one at 106th Street and 35W, in snow, rain, whatever else our Minnesota sprinter, spring winter, is throwing at us. In my career as an educator, I've seen the good that tax dollars can do in the lives of Minnesota's children, and I've also seen the damage the lack of resources can do. This year, the legislature is funding our schools at their biggest levels in years. You will be putting more money on the formula, cutting the special ed and the English language learner cross subsidies, and investing in the mental health of our children, but our students still need more, and they will need future investments. This tax bill is the engine that will invest those tax dollars into our schools and our students. I'm glad that you're targeting the Social Security tax cuts and not creating a permanent tax break for our wealthiest citizens in Minnesota. By increasing taxes on the 1% to the 1% on the wealthiest Minnesotans, this bill can ensure that we invest in the future of our students. On behalf of my students and colleagues, thank you for all of your work on this bill.
Thank you so much for your testimony and your work with our young people. We appreciate it. Ben Balio, and on deck is John Thorson. Welcome to the committee. Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Gomez, members of the committee. My name is Ben Balio, and I'm testifying today on behalf of the Minnesota Nurses Association, whose more than 22,000 members make up 80% of the nurses working at the bedside in hospitals across our state. I'm here to testify in support of House File 1938 as amended to highlight some of the provisions specifically from Article 1 that we're particularly excited to support. First provision I'd like to call attention to is the restructured working family credit, the child tax credit, which we know will have significant positive impacts on the health and well-being of Minnesota's children and families. This type of credit is one of the most direct ways that the legislature can fight childhood poverty and alleviate financial barriers for working families. This would not only help many of the patients that our nurses care for, but it also directly helps some of our members who are the sole income providers for their families.
The second provision we would like to highlight our support for comes from Representative Herr's legislation that would establish a fifth tier for Minnesotans making over $600,000 a year or couples making over $1 million annually. We believe this is a pretty straightforward and more than equitable approach to raising revenues, which we know will be needed for the ongoing priorities of nurses and patients, like ensuring quality and accessible health care for all Minnesotans. Lastly, I would like to highlight the provisions from Representative Hornstein's legislation on worldwide reporting that would ensure that just because a wealthy corporation has the means to store their assets abroad does not mean that they'll be able to do so and continue to dodge paying state taxes on those revenues. The vast majority of Minnesotans do the right thing and pay their taxes. Rich corporations doing in business in Minnesota should do the same. We're very thankful to see this included. All in all, we hope the legislature will enact a tax omnibus this year that demonstrates a serious investment in our state, one that doesn't shortchange future Minnesotans by getting distracted by one-time federal funding or today's politics. We believe House File 1938 demonstrates this investment. With that, Chair Gomez, members of the committee, I'd just like to thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Welcome to the committee, John Thorson. On deck is Devin Bruce.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, my name is John Thorson. I'm legislative director for LIUNA Minnesota, North Dakota. We're Minnesota's infrastructure union, representing more than 14,000 skilled construction laborers who build and maintain our roads, highways, bridges, and the basic utilities that allow our communities to thrive. I'm here to voice our support for a handful of provisions in House File 1938 as amended. I'll begin by thanking Chairs Gomez and Lislegard for crafting a bill that both reduces costs for Minnesota's families, workers, and retirees while making significant local investments to move our state forward. The one-time rebate checks, the child and renter's income tax credits, the full exemption of Social Security for security income for married joint filers earning up to $100,000 a year are all right-sized and targeted to Minnesotans who need them the most. We thank the chairs for including the $100 million increase to both local government aid and county program aid and support for street repair in our capital city. These measures take pressure off of property taxes, maintain strong public services, increase public safety, and will help fix critical infrastructure all throughout the state, as will the exemption of construction materials purchased by local governments and nonprofits. These measures will stretch the value of a dollar committed to local and regional construction projects to fix or replace aging municipal infrastructure that is at or near its capacity and in some cases beyond its useful life. It's also time to fix, catch up, and keep up our roads and bridges and transit. Minnesota has thousands of miles of roads in poor condition, more than 600 structurally deficient bridges, and our transit systems are facing a fiscal cliff. We also have over 800 wastewater infrastructure projects at a cost of $5.3 billion over the next 20 years. In addition to driving regional economic growth and prosperity, these projects will launch thousands of Minnesotans into lifelong careers through registered apprenticeship programs. The construction industry relies on to produce a skilled, safe, and efficient trades workforce. The good that is in this bill is only possible because of the revenue raised in this bill with the fifth tier and worldwide reporting. And again, I want to thank Chairs Gomez and Lislegard for including these provisions in the tax proposal before you. They're investments we can count on to make life better for millions of Minnesotans. They move our state forward while creating and maintaining thousands of good-paying union jobs. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Welcome to the committee. Devin Bruce. On deck is Stu Laurie. Please go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. For the record, my name is Devin Bruce. I am the Public Affairs Coordinator for the Minnesota Association of Professional Employees, a union representing over 16,000 professionals across all agencies, boards, and commissions. On behalf of our union, we would like to thank Chairs Gomez and Lislegard for their comprehensive progressive tax package that targets benefits to lower-income individuals while asking our higher wage earners to pay more, as well as closing the reporting loopholes for corporate income taxes by implementing the worldwide reporting requirements. We would also like to thank the chairs for their moderated approach to expanding the Social Security income tax exemption, the expansion of the child care tax credit for working families, and increasing the student loan deduction, as well as the public pension exemption for individuals who don't qualify for Social Security benefits. While it's politically no good time to raise taxes, this is the right time and the more equitable way to do it. In last week's hearing on the fifth tier, members of the committee mentioned that we created a fourth tier just 10 years ago. So why would this be necessary? However, in those 10 years, the purchasing power of the dollar has decreased by over 29 cents, meaning the $5 billion structural surplus will not go as far as we hope. And as our union's president and the state's senior demographer likes to remind me, Minnesota is facing a demographic cliff with our rapidly aging population. We need to raise more revenue to ensure that we can fund our already strained public and social programs to ensure that they will be soon relying upon. We ask that you support the A23 amendment to House File 1938. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Welcome to the committee, Stu Laurie. On deck is Paul Eager.
Thank you, Chair Gomez and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Stu Laurie. I'm the Government Relations Director for Minnesota Farmers Union. And on behalf of our family farmer members and an array of agricultural organizations, I want to say a big and sincere thank you for including your extension of the beginning farmer tax credit. Farming is hugely capital intensive, as some of you know firsthand, and this is one way that the state helps new farmers get started in their operations. More specifically, and for our members, I want to thank you for expanding this credit to allow it to serve family members to assist in generational farm transition. As any farmer will tell you, transitioning a farm is costly and complex. This will help families transition their land sooner and get new farmers on the land, an unqualified win for our state. Second, thank you for increasing this credit for underserved farmers. Our hope is that this will give folks who aren't coming into a generational operation a leg up and help them broker relationships with existing operators. Third and finally, for that credit, we appreciate increasing that credit for ag assets to incent folks to use that side of the credit. Much like home ownership and agriculture, owning land is how you build generational wealth and build that security in your operation, and so we really appreciate the additional investment there. Finally, just a quick plug for the SWCD aid. Huge fans of that at Farmers Union. Our SWCDs are the on-the-ground technical service experts that help our members implement soil health practices, manage floodwaters, as is top of mind for a lot of farmers across the state right now, and that investment will ensure that they'll continue to be able to provide high quality services to our members. So thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Welcome to the committee. I'm Paul Eager. And Melvin Tennant, you're on deck.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Paul Eager, and I'm Senior Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the Minnesota Realtors Association. We're a statewide business trade association with over 22,000 members, working with buyers and sellers of all types of property in every corner of the state. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today on the omnibus tax bill and Minnesota Realtors' support for provisions in the bill that provide additional property tax relief for homeowners. I'd also like to thank Chair Liz Lagarde and the members of the division for their work on several of the items that I'm going to address in my testimony, as well as an additional item that was heard in the division and has been added since the report was submitted to the full tax committee. While we often talk about the barriers to getting into home ownership, such as limited supply of housing and lack of capital for a down payment, rising property taxes also present a barrier to sustainable home ownership for many. When home values rise faster than other types of property, the property tax burden can shift, putting pressure on family budgets and the need for consideration of additional property tax relief. We appreciate the increases in value thresholds and the maximum exclusion amount for the homestead market value exclusion, which is found in Article 3, Section 15 of the bill. However, these amounts have not been adjusted since the exclusion was created in 2011, and we hope there will be some consideration given to further increasing these amounts in the final omnibus tax bill later this session. We also appreciate the provision in Article 3, beginning in Section 21, increasing the household income limit and reducing the number of years a homeowner must own and occupy their home to qualify for the Senior Citizens Property Tax Deferral Program. Modifying the eligibility criteria will provide some seniors struggling to pay their property taxes an option that will allow them to remain in their home and age in place. Minnesota Realtors also supports the reduction in copay percentage for the Homestead Credit Refund Program in Article 4, Sections 2 and 3, which provides direct relief to homeowners whose property taxes are high relative to their income. We also appreciate the inclusion in the bill of a one-time increase in the Homestead Credit State Refund for property taxes payable in 2023. Because this is direct relief to homeowners, this program does not shift property tax burden onto other property owners. We also support the inclusion in the bill of a temporary increase found in Article 4, Section 26 for the additional or the targeting property tax refund program, which provides direct relief to homeowners who have large property tax increases from one year to the next. And we're pleased to see that addition to the bill that was not in the division report. The targeting refund, like the Homestead Credit Refund, does not shift property tax burden on other classes of property. Finally, Madam Chair, members of the committee, we also support the provision in Article 3 of the bill to allow property owners with a valid ITIN issued by the Internal Revenue Service to qualify for homestead status and the homestead property tax refund. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify today and look forward to working with you for the remainder of the session.
Thank you very much, Mr. Egger, for your testimony. Welcome to the committee, Melvin Tennant. On deck is Libby Murphy. Please go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. Members of the committee, Melvin Tennant, President and CEO of Meet Minneapolis, our convention and visitors association. And I'll be very brief today because I'm here simply to say thank you for including the proposal authorizing a municipality to establish a tourism improvement district in the House Omnibus Tax Bill. While I'm here representing Meet Minneapolis specifically, the proposal is supported by many tourism organizations and business associations from around the state. So that's a very broad cross-section of organizations. In other states, tourism improvement districts have proven to be a tool that generates funding for the industry, which in turn grows the industry and results in economic benefits to the residents first and to the local area and state. And it supports much-needed jobs in our industry for those workers in our industry. And we believe this is a real game changer to help the tourism industry continue its recovery, but also to prepare for what I think is a really bright future for our industry. So again, I want to thank you for including the Tourism Improvement District legislation, authorizing legislation in the House Omnibus Tax Bill. And again, I want to thank you all for your service to our state. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Welcome to the committee, Libby Murphy. On deck is Rhonda Otteson.
Hello, committee. Chair Gomez, committee members, my name is Libby Murphy. I'm the Director of Policy at the Minnesota Housing Partnership. Thank you for this opportunity today. Minnesota Housing Partnership supports a number of provisions in the bill, the child tax credit and other targeted refunds and credits to improve Minnesotans' financial well-being and economic security will positively impact many households. We strongly support the creation of the Local Affordable Housing Aid Program in Article 4, Section 22. Counties, cities, and tribal nations are critical partners in creating more affordable homes and preserving existing homes. Having additional resources enables local units of governments and tribal nations to tailor solutions and respond more creatively to unique housing needs. Additional local tools complement other state investments and allow communities to pursue development and rehab projects independent of other state resources. We also support the creation of the Tribal National Aid. In Article 12, Section 27, MHP has worked in partnership and provided direct technical assistance to several tribal nations in Minnesota. Housing and community development go hand in hand. We additionally support the expansion of the Local Homeless Prevention Aid Program in Article 4, Section 20. Minnesota must do everything to ensure no Minnesotan experiences homelessness, and when homelessness does occur, it is brief and one time. The 4D tax rate was established to support the creation, preservation, and ongoing maintenance of affordable units to ensure that Minnesotans live in safe, healthy, and dignified homes. The inclusion of community land trust homes recognizes the uniqueness of the land trust model for homeowners. Providing tax relief to owners of land trust homes ensures homeownership is within reach to Minnesotans of lower incomes. We do strongly urge the committee to support the creation of a single uniform tax rate of 0.25 so the program can work as intended upon its creation. Lastly, MHP supports additional funding to the Workforce and Affordable Homeownership Development Program in Article 12, Section 26. Minnesota's disparity in homeownership rates between white households and BIPOC households is embarrassing and the result of intentional policy practices. The inclusion of these funds is necessary to helping households overcome structural barriers to achieving homeownership. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Welcome to the committee, Rhonda Otteson. And on deck, Mary Jo George.
Thank you, Chair Gomez, Vice Chair Norris, and members of the committee for your work on this this session on this important tax bill, a fantastic and robust tax bill that will impact all of Minnesota. My name is Rhonda Otteson, Executive Director of the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless, and I live in Willmar. MCH is a statewide organization with over 70 members across the state, and we work with in deep partnership with people with lived experience of homelessness and housing instability in our work. Tonight, there are 20,000 people here in Minnesota who don't have a place to live, and 50,000 people over the next year will experience homelessness. I want to specifically call out the issue or the key provisions in this tax bill that make a big difference in preventing and addressing homelessness here in Minnesota. First, the significant increase to the local homeless prevention aid is critical. This Minnesota is facing a homelessness crisis, and we need the resources at the local level to respond to the needs. I want to thank Chair Gomez for modifying the local homeless prevention aid to now include tribal nations as recipients. This aid is truly critical to Minnesota's 11 tribal nations as they combat homelessness challenges. We stand with our partners at the Minnesota Tribal Collaborative to prevent and homelessness as they continue to work to access resources that many localities already have access to. And any provision that includes tribes is really important. Second, thank you for establishing the local affordable housing aid. MCH supports investments in long-term solutions to homelessness, preserving and increasing the supply of homes that are affordable to Minnesotans. Exiting homelessness is essential to address our homelessness crisis. And finally, I want to express my support for the renter's credit and the Minnesota Child Tax Credit, which will provide much needed ongoing financial relief to renters and low-income Minnesota families with children across Minnesota who are cost burdened by the rising prices of housing, food, and transportation. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Mary Jo George, welcome to the committee. You're our final testifier, no pressure.
Yeah.
Please go ahead with
I wish we were saving the best for last, but I know that.
Oh, no doubt.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mary Jo George, and I'm the Associate State Director of Advocacy with ARP Minnesota. On behalf of our nearly 620,000 members, we'd like to thank you for the opportunity to testify today and the good work that you have done on this bill. As we have testified previously, Social Security tax relief is an issue our members care deeply about. So overall, we believe this bill takes a significant step towards providing Social Security tax relief for our seniors. We appreciate the approach taken in the bill of eliminating the Social Security taxes up to $100,000 for couples and $78,000 for singles, and continuing the subtraction for earners over these thresholds. We believe this approach is much more straightforward for Minnesotans to understand and will provide much-needed tax relief to middle-class retirees who are feeling the pressures of rising health and long-term care costs and other expenses, especially in these times of high inflation. Additionally, we want to lend our support to changing the definition of income from the more broader provisional definition to adjusted gross income, because retirees will benefit under this definition as well. Moreover, creating a simpler tax subtraction option not only gives the seniors the choice of using this option or the current subtraction in law, but we think it's good tax policy and is designed to prevent a tax cliff for seniors who might just be over these thresholds. So thank you for your thoughtfulness on putting this these ideas together. However, I must say, as negotiations continue with the Senate, you know, ARP is hopeful that we could continue to look at possibly phasing out this tax altogether, or at least looking at raising the income thresholds as other states have done most recently. Regarding this bill's property tax relief provision, ARP strongly supports tax relief for homeowners and renters alike. We support increasing the homestead credit. This is both the ongoing and the one-time relief. Because we believe more Minnesotans can stay in their homes and communities with this. And we also support the transformational changes to the renter's credit proposal in this bill. And we believe this will go a long way to help reduce housing costs for those struggling to afford their rent and other basic necessities. Finally, I just want to close by saying we support the senior citizen property tax deferral program. This can help cash-strapped seniors pay their property taxes, and then the targeted relief for homeowners who may have experienced a spike in their property taxes. Together, these provisions will allow more Minnesota older residents to continue to age in place and offer an additional step towards remedying long-standing inequalities in the housing arena. Thank you for your time, and we appreciate the good work.
Thank you very much. I think Representative Sudzinski might had a not for Ms. George. You're good. You can go back to your seat. Thank you so much for your testimony, Representative Sudzinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just maybe I don't know if you just did a general ask to see if anyone from the public that didn't sign up ahead of time. If you want to do that, and then
we got
time. If no one asks, anyone else. Okay. Just in general, Madam Chair. You know, we heard a lot of testimony today, which I really do appreciate. But I wanted to reach out. One of the areas that I did not hear anyone testify in favor of was the changes to the e-poll tabs and that. Was there any organizations or groups? I guess I don't know who potentially even supports that since there was no testimony on that. I would just open it up to the public here.
If I open it up to the public?
Sounds great.
Thank you. Is there anybody else from the public who wishes to testify on the bill as amended today? Yeah, please. Welcome to the committee.
I'm Mark Hughes, and I'll be really brief. You won't even know I was here today. I support ARP and the things that they said. They said a lot of things, but I know what they're after. I've read their materials, and I support them. Thank you. And so I hope you folks do. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. All right. Not seeing. Yeah, please come on up. Welcome to the committee. Just as you're getting started with your testimony, if you don't mind introducing yourself, that would be great.
Hello, my name is Brett Keefe. I'm a member of the Cast and Post 333 American Legion. I just wanted to say that the ETAB thing, right now we're getting taxed 36% by the state. So then we get local tax, which I heard a guy earlier say could be up to 10%. So we're looking at 40-some percent tax. Well, we pay 35% to the ETAB people for our bingo product. So that's, and then we do 20 more percent to, if we have a bar that we have our bingo stuff in, that's 20 more percent. That's like 98%. We're getting like 2% back that we can give out to our charities, or 2 cents on the dollar, sorry. And anything that jeopardizes any of that, that's going to directly affect. Biggest thing for us is we won't be able to give any money to the homeless. We won't be able to give any money to the food shelves. So if this bill passes and it hurts the ETABs, whoever voted for it is directly taking money out of the homeless and hungry people's mouths. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. All right, not seeing anyone else, I just want to thank everybody for being here today, and thank you for all of the members of the public who helped provide us with some perspective on our tax bill. We have a lot to think about as we're moving forward. We'll be meeting tomorrow, April 19th at 9 a.m., where we'll have member discussion and markup of the House tax bill, so looking forward to that discussion tomorrow. Rep. Wiener, did you have something for the good of the order before we adjourn?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want everybody to know that Jim's having a really tough day today because it's his birthday. So if everybody would please pat him on the back.
Oh, all right. We're going to give him congratulations and pat him on the back. I will spare you from having us sing you happy birthday, although that's what I want to do. Okay, with that... Cold blood. Okay, there's some GOP on GOP violence going on to my left. I'm going to ignore. Our next meeting, as I mentioned, is tomorrow. That's not the right date. Is tomorrow Wednesday? Is the 18th the right date? 19th. Sorry, Wednesday, April 19th, 9 a.m. See you here then. We are adjourned.